And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of A Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and we've got a really full show today. It's going to be a lot of fun talking to lots of folks here today, including Stacy Polson, who's here from the Nugget Mall to talk about community garage sale, Valentine's events, a bride's fair coming up, and a lot of other stuff. Eric Olson is here to talk about a adventure series photo show happening tonight at Cycle Alaska. The guys from the Jump Society will be here to talk about their shows coming up this weekend, starting tomorrow night. The Jump Society Film Festival starts. Pat Race and Lou Logan will be here. We're going to be talking to the folks from Wildlife Wednesday, and Wayne Regalin, the former head of the Wildlife Division of Fish and Game, will be here. He'll be talking about wildlife management in Alaska. That's a presentation happening tonight at UAS for Wildlife Wednesdays. And the folks from Eagle Crest will be here, too, to talk to us about what's happening in the upcoming week at Eagle Crest. It's periods of rain today with highs around 38 degrees and rain in the evening tonight. Then snow late, snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches tonight, with roads around 31 degrees. And for tomorrow, snow in the morning and then rain likely in the afternoon. Snow accumulation to 1 inch and the snow level rising up to about 400 feet in the afternoon. Snow and rain likely for tomorrow night as well, and snow and rain in the forecast for Friday as well. So that's good news for the folks up at Eagle Crest. We'll talk to them later on this hour about that. First, here is National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Yankton Sioux resident is the first South Dakota person to be charged under the state's new law that requires notification of the death of a child. A 2-year-old girl was found dead in a family home for nearly 2 days. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The law, known as Cayley's Law, after a noted case from Florida, took effect in South Dakota last July. It requires those with knowledge of the death of a child to report that death to authorities as soon as possible. 29-year-old Lori Knoyer of Wagner, South Dakota, pleaded guilty to not reporting the death of a 2-year-old girl who was staying at Knoyer's residence. The child's body was in a closet for nearly 2 days before Knoyer and her husband, 21-year-old Taylor Knoyer, reported the death. An 11-year-old boy has been charged in the child's death as well. His information and details of his alleged involvement are not being released because he's a juvenile. Knoyer also pleaded guilty to possession of methamphetamine and keeping a place for use or sale of drugs. Attorney General Marty Jackley says Knoyer also pleaded guilty to a second meth possession charge, which comes from her time in the Charles Mix County Jail. Knoyer's husband was sentenced to 13 years in prison late last year after he pleaded guilty to a possession charge and one count of keeping a place for drug use or sale. In a plea agreement, prosecutors dropped charges of child abuse and failure to report a child's death. Lori Knoyer is scheduled for sentencing in March. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
The Minneapolis Star Tribune reports security was tied at Tuesday's jury selection in federal court in a case involving a Native American gang. Three alleged members of the violent gang, known for activity in the Twin Cities and reservations in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and other states, are facing charges including racketeering. The Native mob trial is expected to take several weeks. Tribal colleges in New Mexico are seeking the same eligibility for their students in the state's lottery scholarship program. KUNM's Rita Daniels has more.
Since 1996, more than 80,000 bright students from across New Mexico have attended universities and colleges within the state with the help of a legislative lottery scholarship. The program pays full tuition for 8 consecutive semesters, granted the recipient has either graduated from a local high school or holds a state-issued GED. The scholar must also be enrolled full-time while maintaining a GPA of 2.5 or higher. However, the 3 higher education tribal schools located within the state have never been eligible for the lottery funds. Democratic Representative Eliseo Alcon says it is now time for Native students to have access to the same opportunities as non-Native students in New Mexico.
The children that are going to these Native American schools, they either get scholarships or they pay out of pocket to attend those schools. So what we've been trying to do is use some of this lottery money to help our Native American children pay for their tuition. Go to these other schools.
Additionally, the tribal schools are seeking equal reimbursements that other public higher education institutions receive for dual credit courses that count for both high school and college credit. Representative Alcon says getting the bill passed could be an uphill battle, considering the state education lottery fund is shrinking. The funds would benefit students at the Navajo Technical College, as well as the Institute of American Indian Arts and Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute. For National Native News, I'm Rita Daniels.
During this week in 1925, Maria Tallchief, the first Native American ballerina, was born in Oklahoma. The Osage woman's career included performances around the world. She was also the prima ballerina for the New York City Ballet. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon here on KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. With me now is Stacy Polson, who's the marketing director out at the Nugget Mall. Stacy, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You guys have lots of stuff coming up, including a garage sale, a community garage sale. Tell me a little bit about what's happening there.
Yeah, that's going to be this weekend from 10 until 6 p.m., and it's going to be full. I've only got four spots left for that.
So if someone wants a spot, they need to contact you right now.
ASAP.
Then you leave a message on your voicemail right now while you're talking.
That's right. Yeah, and we do have an online registration form too. It's a little tricky to figure out though, so you can always call me if you have any problems.
Where's the form online?
If you go to our website, it's nuggetmalljuno.com, and go to the events page, scroll down to January events. You'll see the
community
cool. garage sale.
Cool. And it's just anyone who's got some items and wants to get a space?
Yeah, it's a combination. We kind of market it for the nonprofits because they can get spaces for free and use it as a fundraiser, which is great for them. And we've got several coming. We have Polaris House and Juno Soccer Club, American Cancer Society, the Eagles, and Women of the Moose. So we've got several.
Great.
More than that.
Yeah, and great opportunity for those organizations to just get some extra funds from contributions from people who belong to those groups.
Yeah, and it's a good time of year to have it inside the mall because it's cold and wet outside.
It's kind of miserable.
Yes.
Yes. It's when we really like having the Nugget Mall for us here, just to go inside somewhere and walk around without getting rained on. Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, we do have a lot of people that come and walk in the mornings because we open an hour early just for them to come and walk.
Oh, is for exercise? Come and walk for exercise? That's a great idea.
Four times around if you use every entrance is a mile.
Oh, okay. Mm. I didn't know.
Good to know.
That is good to know. All right. And so that's the garage sale. And have you had these before?
Yeah. This is our second or third one in a year in a row.
And highly attended?
People really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's a good event.
When does that open up and everything? Is that Saturday? Is that when that starts?
That will be this Saturday from 10 until 6 p.m.
Okay, great. So get there early because that stuff goes quick.
It does.
The people who show up, when you do a real garage sale, you got the guys who show up at 7 a.m. You got fishing gear? Right?
Yeah.
You're looking for some specific stuff. No, they leave.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you've also got some Valentine's events coming up at the Nugget Mall that sound pretty fun.
We do. We have a Valentine's contest, which is actually going on right now. You have to guess the number of candy hearts that are in a vase. And the vase is located in the old plum tree window, if you're familiar with that. It's across from Holly's Hallmark.
Sort of that mid-entrance to the mall.
Exactly.
Right across from that, yeah.
And there's a table.
From the bust of the founder of the Nugget Mall.
Yeah.
I love that thing. the brass relief of a guy's face.
Yeah, you gotta love his nose.
Yeah, the nose. It's kind of polished down because people. Yeah. I think it's good luck to rub his nose, maybe. So okay, so it's right by there. So guess the number of. Is it like the little sweetheart Smarties?
Yeah, the bean mine.
Yeah. Okay, so little guess the hearts. Number, and then what's the
there's
prize?
There's a table set up there with the registration forms, cool. entry forms. The prize is a gift basket for two, and it's full of all types of goodies from the stores.
Great. Okay, yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then upcoming, you've got a bride fair happening, right?
Well, yeah. Before the bride fair, okay. we also have a Valentine's Tea Party.
Oh, okay.
And that's going to be on February 10th. And I think I forgot to mention that the drawing for the Valentine's contest is on February 9th.
Okay.
So you get it in time to give it to your sweetheart.
For Valentine's, yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
And then what's the tea party going to be?
Well, the tea party, they have crustless sandwiches and scones with lemon curd, which
those little triangular sandwiches
yes.
with the crust. Oh, I like that, yeah.
And
so it's high tea.
It is.
It's like an English high tea.
Fresh fruit and jams and tea.
Right.
And how do you say it? Petite fours or...
Petit, I don't know.
You got it.
I don't know.
That was
pathetic. But I love this idea of like having these little things. And then what's really great is that actually this is better than any English high tea because it's with real Alaskan jams. Are there some actual like Alaskan jams and stuff like that? Fresh stuff?
Well, it's all homemade.
All homemade.
Yeah.
See? So it's going to be better than even if you went to some amazing hotel in London, this will be even better.
Yeah, and last year she did lavender cream, which I'd never had before, and it's really yummy.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, and the way to get tickets for that is to get a hold of Vintage Fair, and right now you can get an early bird special on that, so it's $15 for one and $29 for two. So
awesome, okay, high tea.
It goes up after January 7th.
Okay.
February 7th.
So, February 7th. Right. So, okay, the early bird. And then tell me about this bride fair. What's happening there?
Well, the bride fair is going to be on March 2nd, and it's actually bride, prom, and party. So we're combining a bunch of fun events into one event.
Cool, all right.
Yeah, we're going to have makeup and DJs, photography.
And gowns.
Gowns, if I can get them.
Okay,
yeah,
right,
we don't
yeah.
actually have a bridal store in the mall anymore, so
okay.
I'm hoping somebody will step up and help me out with that.
Okay.
I would love to have a fashion show.
Great.
And if somebody would like to help me out with live entertainment, you can promote your business for free. I'll give you a booth space for free.
Oh, great.
At the Bride Fair.
So just contact you at the Nugget Mall, Stacy
mm-hmm.
Polson, marketing director at the Nugget Mall, maybe online or
yeah,
or
my
call.
Phone number
okay.
is 789-4439, and my email is nugetmall@acsalaska.net.
Okay.
So those are two ways to get a hold of me, but you can also stop by the office.
Okay,
I'm
great.
Friendly. I don't
yes.
bite.
And just a little bit of business here. You have a lost wallet. You wanted to give a little bit of...
thank you for reminding
sure.
me. Yes, I've had this wallet for about a week now, and it's got all the stuff in it, and I cannot track her down. It belongs to Jessica Pons Hardy. So if she's listening or a friend is listening, please contact me. It's at the mall office.
Okay, so Jessica Hardy, if there's someone out there that knows Jessica Hardy and she's lost her wallet and she doesn't know where it is, Stacy has it.
Yes.
And she hasn't gone through it or anything.
And I'd like to give it back.
Right, and she'd like to give it back to you. So let her know. And there it is, all the stuff happening at the Nugget Mall. Garage sale stuff coming up this weekend and then on to all the Valentine's events. February 7th is the time for the early bird special and contact
yep.
Vintage Fair for the high tea for that. And the drawing for guests, the sweethearts, is on February 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like a great time to be had by all for all the great events happening at the Nugget Mall. And as you said, great time of the year to go to the Nugget Mall when it's rainy.
That's right.
Mixed
come get
with
some exercise.
Snow out there and get some exercise and walk around the mall.
And if you're interested in other events that are going on at the mall, I have them listed on my office door. You can pick up a flyer. It has quite a few of them laid
all
out
right.
for the year.
Great. Stacy Polson from the Nugget Mall. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for okay. having me.
Thank you.
to Kraftwerk there with Tour de France. And that's because we've got folks from Cycle Alaska in here with us right now. Brianna Swanson is actually with Cycle Alaska. Brianna, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Eric Olson, who is doing a lecture, kind of speaking and talking and a slideshow and stuff like that tonight. At Cycle Alaska. Tell me a little bit about what's happening in your presentation.
Well, John McConaughey asked me to come along. I have taken my bike to Europe, I think it's 6 times. And last August, September, I went with a catered group. That's sort of the point of the discussion, to compare it with other ways of adventuring with your bike. And I
so it was a setup kind of?
It was a setup deal. You arrive here, you leave from there, and they have all the hotels and the van between. We went basically from Vienna to Venice through southern Austria and then the Dolomites and...
Nice.
Yeah.
sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds like you could maintain a constant weight through that by eating a lot and then cycling a lot.
The food's good, and you can drink as much wine.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Yeah. So, and this is a little bit different for you. You've done more independent traveling with cycling before?
I did one trip 2 years ago with the same company, and then I did 3 trips in the past with local people from Juneau, Greg Cook and others, and we arranged it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheaper that way, and, you know, a limited group, only 6 people, 6 or 7 men. Actually,
right.
The wives all stayed home that time, those times. And I took the bike another time when it was a family trip, and it wasn't a bike trip, but I got to escape and do some riding. And this Austria is gorgeous, and the Dolomites are gorgeous, and some of the riding's very hard.
I was going to ask now, that's got to be a pretty tough route.
These various companies, I went with one of them, they have, some of them are really rather cushy with shorter rides and very expensive hotels, and some are more Spartan, and some are much even tougher than what we did in terms of miles per day. But you can make it hard by taking alternative routes.
And sure.
I did a little bit of that on the way because I knew where I wanted to go. I changed gearing for the trip. I'll talk about that tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For the kind of gearheads out there, the real bike enthusiasts out there.
Yeah, some people don't know how many gears their bikes have.
Well, tell me a little bit about that. What do you mean? Well, I didn't know you could change. You just have different sprocket sizes, kind of? Is that what you do?
Yeah, you can. There's that cluster on the back. Mm-hmm. Around here, I use, if you want to be technical, 11 by 25. And I found aftermarket 11 by 30. And I changed the front to inner granny, it's called, to a 28. So I could really have a super low gear, and if you want to go ride up and down Main Street or Kennedy or what's the one where you go back around to 7th Street?
Yeah, right.
You need, at least I,
yeah,
need pretty low gear.
To do it in a straight line anyway. You can always do the weave.
Yeah.
Back and forth. You know.
Even then on the steepest
That's
ones,
true.
I stopped and took pictures.
Might take you a while.
And Cycle Alaska, of course, can help people with that kind of changes to their bikes and that kind of stuff, right?
Of course we can. 2 mechanics on right now that can help people out with that.
Yeah. Now, this is part of a series that you guys kind of do on occasion, or is it a regular thing that you're trying to do every week or every month, something like that?
Once a month.
Okay.
And we kind of do it in the winter here to get people in and entertain them. So we've been doing it on the third Thursday of every month.
Third Thursday. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
Next month it'll be the second Thursday.
Okay.
It'll be a different date.
Do you know who's going to be doing it next month?
Yep. Or? It'll be Alice and Scott. They had done it a couple months ago, and they'll be doing it again on the 13th at 5:30.
Right.
And so.
Great. Yeah. Eric, what was the favorite part of this past trip that you took?
Well, I got up the mountain called the Zoncolan. It's incredibly steep. It's been used as in the Giro d'Italia.
Okay.
And I'd seen pictures of this. I'd seen pictures of professionals who were just dying up there.
Uh-huh.
And I worked the one day, so made sure I got up there.
So this is a known kind of climb for cyclists that, you know.
Yeah, geeks, you follow
right,
the...
Right, sure.
And despite all the... I mean, I think none of the pros go up it without, in the last 20 years, without the benefit of drug enhancement, probably.
And
I did it with lower gears and did it really
slowly.
That's
the only way I get through the show.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I've got to do the performance enhancing beforehand.
Right.
It is an interesting thing for, I mean, that's all. What's your thought about all this Lance Armstrong stuff? It's an interesting thing to hear about.
I've got a lot of videos that I watch when I cycle in the garage in the wintertime, and I just think, Doper. Oh, doper, doper, doper.
That's why I'm so tired.
It's a pretty complicated discussion.
It is.
Yeah.
Seems like the whole sport has developed into this sort of, it's a terrible way to think about it, but it's sort of like...
Sad to say it's not just cycling.
Yeah, well, that's
you
also true.
You see it in every sport.
Yeah, that's also true. That's also true, yeah. This competitive cycling is so based on the absolute limits of what a human body can do, you know, day after day after day.
And money.
And money, yeah, right. Yeah. So, yeah, that sort of drives this bad behavior.
I didn't get paid to go up these climbs.
No.
It went the other way.
No, your only performance-enhancing drug was good Italian wine. right?
Good Italian coffee.
And good Italian coffee, yeah. That's right. And just to broaden it out a little bit, do you have a favorite cycling trip you've taken forever?
Oh, I like everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I really did enjoy the trips I did with the local guys, the Jim Thompson, John Conley, and Greg Cook, but even there, I'd go off by myself sometimes because I want to notch another big famous climb.
And primarily in Europe?
These were all in. I did take the bike to New Zealand too when my wife and I went down to visit our daughter there. And I rode with her. Mm-hmm. I rode with 9,000 people around Lake Taupo.
Oh, wow.
An event that's like the like the Kluane Relay, but much, much bigger.
Sounds, yeah,
beautiful
a few more
too.
Participants, yeah. Do you have a big one out there, either in the planning or one that you kind of wish someday I'll do it?
Right now, I don't have a trip planned. My wife and I might go to Europe next fall, but we don't have one planned.
Yeah. Right. And so for tonight, lots of photos and talking about the route.
There's
and then
over
lots
100,
of
and I'll try to talk about this style of catered versus self-arranged trips. And the one that Mike Tobin gave a show sometime in December, I think it was, and I know him, and I went to the show, and it was very different because it was solo, basically, loaded with all his gear on his bike, and they're very different, and I think part of the adventure series should show how these things can be done this way and done that way, and compromises with budget, time, energy.
All those things to think about in the planning and kind of working through a trip like this. Anything happening else? Anything else happening at Cycle Alaska you want to talk about? Any other things going on right now or things maybe people should be thinking about with their bikes? A lot of people have their bikes kind of mothballed right now.
Is there stuff people should
be doing?
With winter and everything right now, it's a good time to bring your bike in and get it ready for spring. That way it's ready to go as soon as that sun comes back out.
Yeah, but get it all nice and shiny and lubricated and ready to go so that first really nice day out there.
And when the gravel gets cleaned off the road.
When the gravel, that's right, exactly. A little bit of the glass and gravel and all that stuff that collects during the winters. Well, thanks to both you, Eric and Brianna, for coming in. Eric, you're doing your talk tonight at Cycle Alaska. It's at 5:30. It's part of the Adventure Series, and it's all about bike touring in Europe. Thanks so much for coming in to both of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Jump. Yeah. Well, Jump's coming up. It's coming up tomorrow night, the first showing of the first 2013 Jump coming up from the Alaska Robotics Lucid Reverie crew, and Pat Race and Lou Logan from that crew are in with the studio with me right now. Hey, guys.
Are we on the air?
Good. You're just practicing.
You're on. We're on the air. This is it. This is not practice.
I thought we got a practice.
Well, you could practice,
first,
and then you know.
Then we talk to people.
Sure.
No.
There you go. Now you're good.
Okay.
Jump. It's coming up. It's
That's
coming
true.
Up tomorrow night. You guys are mad in the mad process of getting stuff together
we
and editing
we've
it.
We've started that yet.
A little later every year. Yeah. We'll be up all night tonight.
He'll be
still
up all night.
Still haven't started. Yeah.
The
that
worst,
is the pattern.
The
it
worst
happens.
Was 1 year when we had. We were screening the first half of the festival and putting the second half onto a disc to go run up the hill and play. It all worked out fine.
Yeah,
but
it does all work out.
A lot of submissions, and it'll be a good show. I'm excited.
Greg Chaney once again coming through with another 700th consecutive film that he's done. How many? He's been in every single festival,
I think he's
right?
Been in every single festival, yeah.
That's very cool. What's he doing his one on this year?
It's called Polar Bear Dip, and it's a quick profile of Juno's Polar Bear Dip on New Year's Day.
Yeah, out at UAS they do that. Yeah,
it's a bunch of people running out
commercial.
There and freezing various appendages off.
Yes. It's also called the beginning stages of gangrene.
That's right.
And what other fun ones that you guys know about, or other people that are maybe let's talk about the regulars. Who are some of the other regulars that
Corin and Brady? They have a film in there.
Two of them. Yep. Well, Brady has two.
Yep. And let's see who else is back. We've got we've got a. I am there.
Pat Race is
back.
That
guy.
It's like a disease you can't get rid of.
Patty Kalbrenner.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's cool. Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, who else do we have that's been in there?
Patty's doing one on the Roller Girls.
Yeah, is she? Yeah,
yeah,
I guess so. I haven't
that's
seen
what she's
it
doing
yet.
Or
we
I've talked
we have
to her
a lot of
it.
Them to watch. I think Aaron's seen a few, Lou's seen a few, I've seen a couple of them, and we haven't seen all of them, each of us yet.
Do you have many submissions from kids that you know of?
We were going to get a couple. Yeah, well, I've got Izzy.
Okay, cool.
Izzy submitted two, highly experimental. They're called, have you heard of YouTube Poops?
No.
Yeah,
what's that?
Yeah. So I guess these kids, like, I don't know, 12 to 15-year-old kids get together and they cut up a bunch of video stuff into sort of a humorous, weird, experimental mashup.
Okay.
And then they send it to another kid, and then they cut up that thing that was cut up, and that's called YouTube Poop Tennis when they send it back and forth.
Why? And they, why poop?
I don't know.
It's just the excretion of all the YouTube or something. Yeah.
So it's, they're weird, and I like them a lot.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, Izzy's a teenager, and so that's a teenage year. That's that teenage realm of stuff that's happening too. And that's one of the cool things about Jump. You see all these kids who've done stuff early on, or their parents even got them to do stuff, or they were starring as little kids, and now they're getting into the realm
and
where
they're
making
avant-garde films.
And it will be they're part of the digital age, so it'll be blackmail for when they're older.
Yes, that's right. It'll always be there.
None of them will be able to get jobs because of Jump, but for now we'll enjoy that benefit.
This is the dark side of Jump.
Jump is on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. This Thursday.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah. Starting tomorrow night. We've got a 7,
already?
7 yeah. o'clock show tomorrow, and then 7 and 9 on Friday and Saturday.
At Gold Town Nickelodeon.
And tell folks about tickets.
Tickets are free. You can get them at 220 Front Street. That's called the Alaska Robotics Gallery. And you can also get comic books and graphic novels there and bother Aaron.
Yeah. Or Bridget sometimes.
Or Bridget.
Yeah, and the tickets are just like seat holder tickets. We did that after the first couple of shows where we had way too many people at one
riots.
Show. And
you actually had a riot.
Yeah, we had a riot. There was
it was bad.
People turned over cars
tear
in the
gas.
Parking
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, the ticket riots of 2002.
Yeah. And so we started instituting a ticket
time.
Policy. You can still show up at the door, and generally you'll get in. But it's better if you can swing by and grab a
ticket
ahead
just,
of time.
It's a courtesy thing. Just go ahead and swing by the store. They're right there by Gross Alaska 20th Century Theater. It's a cool store anyway if you've never been in there. But even if you have, stop by. Just say, how about two tickets for 9 o'clock show on Saturday night?
And then
they
say no.
Here you go.
And then we say 7 o'clock.
They negotiate with you, yes. Then the negotiations begin. All right. So Jump Film Festival. It's happening. How many films about? Somewhere in the 20 something.
Yeah, I think it's 17 to 20. Last time I looked.
17 to 80, I think.
Somewhere in that range.
It'll be a five-hour screening.
Between a half-hour to a five-hour show. and it's all short films. The one submission requirement, it has to be 10 minutes or under, and that's basically it. And if there's any kind of off-color ones, those are you guys let people know about it. So it's a kid-friendly show for at least the first section, and then you always kind of let the other ones be segmented out to the second half after intermission.
Yeah, we generally don't take anything out because it contains adult language or, you know, violence or sexual innuendo or whatever. We'll just leave all that stuff in and then shove it towards the end of the festival so that if you've got kids, it's generally pretty family-friendly up until the end, and then you can, and we'll warn you ahead of time.
Right, and the really funny ones are on.
Yeah.
Andy will be there.
Yeah, I'll be there. All right, you guys, Jump Film Festival happening Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The Thursday show, the premiere is, of course, Thursday, tomorrow night, and that's at 7 o'clock. And then at 7 and 9 o'clock shows Friday and Saturday. That's Jump, and that's Lou Logan and Pat Race. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac. Let's bring it down a notch.
Yeah, rock it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 23rd of January, 2013. It's the birthday of the French writer Stendhal, born Marie-Henri Bayle in Grenoble in 1783. He used more than 100 pseudonyms, but he's most famous as Stendhal, and it was as Stendhal that he wrote the two novels that we know him for, Le Rouge et le Noir, The Red and the Black, and La Chartreuse de Parme, The Charterhouse of Parma. It's the birthday of the Irish novelist J.G. Farrell, James Gordon Farrell, born in Liverpool, 1935. Went off to Oxford, contracted polio, had to spend a long time in an iron lung so he could breathe, which was the basis of his second novel, The Lung, a comedy about a hero stricken by polio who has a craving for alcohol and women. J.G. Farrell, best known for a trilogy of novels about the waning of the British Empire. Troubles, published in 1970, The Siege of Krishnapur, 1973, and The Singapore Grip, 1978. He was 50,000 words into another historical novel when he drowned at the age of 44 fishing off the west coast of Ireland. It's the birthday of the poet John Logan, born Red Oak, Iowa, 1923, author of The Zigzag Walk and other collections, who wrote in his poem, Believe It, there is a strawberry that grew out of a carrot plant, a blade of grass that lanced through a thick rock, a cornstalk 19 feet 2 inches tall, grown by George Osborne of Salome, Arkansas. There is something grotesque growing in me I cannot tell. It's the birthday of the poet Derek Walcott, born on St. Lucia in the Caribbean, 1930, grew up reading Wordsworth, John Milton, Andrew Marvel, got a scholarship to study in Jamaica, then to study theater in the United States, then went back home and founded the Trinidad Theater Workshop. Taught at Boston University, became friends with Robert Lowell, and in 1990 published his epic poem, Omeros, a retelling of Homer's Odyssey, set on St. Lucia. Derek Walcott, who said, I come from a place that likes grandeur. It likes large gestures. It is not inhibited by flourish. It is a society of physical performance. It is a society of style. I grew up in a place in which, if you learned poetry, you shouted it out. Boys would scream it out and perform it and flourish it. If you wanted to approximate that thunder or that power of speech, it couldn't be done by a little modest voice in which you muttered something to someone else. I come out of that society of the huge gesture, and literature is like that. Here's a poem for today by W.H. Auden, Their Lonely Betters. As I listened from a beach chair in the shade to all the noises that my garden made, it seemed to me only proper that words should be withheld from vegetables and birds. A robin with no Christian name ran through the robin anthem, which was all it knew, and rustling flowers for some third party waited to say which pairs, if any, should get mated. Not one of them was capable of lying. There was not one which knew that it was dying, or could have, with a rhythm or a rhyme, assumed responsibility for time. Let them leave language to their lonely betters, who count some days and long for certain letters. We, too, make noises when we laugh or weep. Words are for those with promises to keep. They're Lonely Betters, W.H. Auden, from his collected poems, published by Modern Library, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Wild Wildlife there, and it's Wildlife Wednesdays, and Tina Brown's here with us, who presents Wildlife Wednesdays once a month, and this is a January 23rd presentation, which is today, it's tonight, and with us also is Wayne Reglin, who is doing the speech tonight. Thanks so much, Wayne, for coming in.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you, and Tina, thank you for coming in and for always putting on Wildlife Wednesdays. It's such a great series that's been going here, just so informative and fun, and all these amazing people in Juneau who have this sometimes a lifetime of history in wildlife management and in dealing with different aspects of wildlife. It's a great resource. So it's
and
really,
they are so generous. We're very fortunate in Juneau to have people like Wayne and all the other speakers that have come to Wildlife Wednesday, and we have two more months lined up, maybe three, and already starting to book for next year.
That's great. Yeah. All right. So you're doing it. So Wayne, you've gone ahead and done it, haven't you? You've taken on the topic of the history of wolf management in Alaska. There couldn't be probably a more controversial subject in wildlife management in Alaska, I don't think.
Yes. And I tried to approach it from a history perspective and keep my personal opinion out of it. But it's part of a book that I wrote.
Which is called Fish Politics and Wolf Wars, A History of Fish and Game Management in Alaska. I've got a copy of it here. And, yeah, this is a really cool-looking book, comprehensive kind of look at the entire history of wolves and the management of wolves in Alaska.
Which will be sold tonight by the UAS bookstore at the event. Wayne will be signing. So this is a great opportunity to get one signed.
Yeah, so when telling and deciding to do this book and telling it, you really just wanted to present the whole story?
I retired in December of 2006, and I decided I was going to put together a list of all the past leaders of the Department of Fish and Game, because there wasn't such a thing. And I started reading more and more about the history of fish and game management, and it turned into this book. It took me a couple years, you know, on and off. I'd write mostly in the winter and did a lot of reading, and I enjoy it. I've enjoyed writing it very much.
Yeah, so when you say the leaders, you mean all of the different leaders of the different divisions and the different kind of important figures, even if they weren't called a commissioner, they might have been had a very important role in certain topics.
Right. The commissioners and the directors, deputy commissioners. And then I went back into territorial days, too, and talked about all of the people that led the department and or the was Bureau of Biological Services then and when, during territorial days.
So it's got to be one of the most fascinating topics of, I mean, from one perspective, you'd say, well, that's, wow, exploring a department of a state, that sounds pretty dry. But when you think about all of the dynamic people and all of the issues that have happened, and Alaska being this absolute pillar of what wildlife management is all about.
Well, there's parts of it that are probably pretty dry because I wanted to talk about how the department was structured and that kind of thing, just for a history level, or people's interest in it, kind of have a long-term record. But I talk a lot about the salmon management during territorial days and in the first 25 years of statehood. And, you know, it was just deplorable the way we managed salmon.
Yeah, a lot of lessons learned.
It took
learned
us 20 years
that.
To recover after statehood. And I go through all the steps that the state did and the different things that had to happen for us to go from when we took at statehood that run that year for all the salmon species was 25 million. And about in the 90s, we had 200 million return.
So
and
this was the just years of canning and fish traps and just absolutely the most efficient way to get the fish out of the water is what they were doing.
You hear a lot about fish traps, but they put nets right across the mouths of all the rivers. And it just destroyed the fishery. And it took, three things happened that made the fishery recover. We had hatcheries came online, and that was a big deal, and they produced a lot more fish. We got limited entry, and all of a sudden they could manage the fishery properly. Before that, you couldn't exclude anyone from fishing, so they couldn't have long openings or anything. And then the Magnuson-Stevens Act that put the stopped all the foreign fishing, interception of the fishery. So those three things allowed to rebuild. But boy, the fish and game biologists in those early days had to close fisheries and put people probably, out of work for a long time. And some years they were, some places they were closed for years just because they had to rebuild the runs after they were decimated.
Yeah, but as a result of that, now the Alaska fishery management practices are looked upon worldwide as like this example of how you manage fisheries long term.
Yeah, it really is, especially on salmon. You know, we do it. We're the best in the world. And I just always, when I worked at Fish and Game, I was amazed at the commercial fisheries biologists and how the decision making was done by the area biologists that lived in the communities, collected the data, and they knew what to do and how to protect the runs. And it's still pretty much done that way today.
So that's the one end of fish and game. There's the fish end of fish and game, and commercial fishing is that end that we're talking about. You always worked in wildlife and that area. Did you start as a wildlife biologist? Is that your background?
When I first came to Alaska in 1977, I worked for the federal government, Fish and Wildlife Service, as a moose research biologist. And then did that for 6 years, and then I moved to the state. And I worked in the northern half of the state. I was a research supervisor, or research coordinator, they call it, for the northern half of the state. And then I became deputy director, and then director, and then deputy commissioner. So I worked for 24 years for the state.
And there's a wide variety, of course, all the different species that are managed, and that goes even into trapping, and people don't even understand the little tiny species that are managed by fish and game and all that. But it's interesting to me that of all the things, I mean, this, in some ways, the wolf management issue for you might have been even some of the most painful years and painful thing to deal with because it was so divisive and such a tinderbox.
Well, I lived through some of the worst times of that. When Tony Knowles was governor, I was the director for all of those 8 years, and the governor's office and the legislature were just at each other's throats, as you remember, and it was just miserable, and they sort of both sides used me as the messenger.
and the punching bag.
but I survived. Yeah. But I talk a lot about that in the book, and what I tried to do is I spent a lot of time talking about wolf management in Alaska as well as just game management in general because so much of it was related to predator management. But I also have sections in the book. I have a big chapter titled, I can't remember the exact title of the chapter, but it's issues that affected fish and game management. I talk about the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and ANILCA and how that affected fish and game, the oil spill and the oil development in the Arctic and things like that, and just oil development in general, because all of a sudden we were agency struggling and had almost no money. And then when they got all that oil money, the agency just grew at tremendous rates and developed wonderful fisheries research capabilities and wildlife capabilities.
There were sort of parallels in lots of different areas in the state that were exploding during that time with all that influx of money.
Well,
and so specifically to wolf management, so what is it about wolf management that's so different than managing other species, or that creates such controversy based compared to other species in your mind?
Well, I think people relate well to wolves. They like them. And there's a tremendous divergence of values about wolves. You know, there's very few people anymore that think we should exterminate them all. There's a few of those still in Alaska, but most people are pretty proud that we have wolves. But beyond that, then there's a tremendous divergence of values that we shouldn't manage them at all. We should just let them exist, to the point other people think we should regulate them intensively so that we can have more moose and caribou. And the department gets caught in the middle of that. So it's been an interesting way to watch it develop over the years and how different governors dealt with it. Because almost it's so intense and such a big political issue, almost all of the governors got involved some way. The only one that didn't in any way was Cooper. The day after Cooper was elected, he announced that we weren't going to do any wolf control during his administration, period. It was a surprise to a lot of people because he hadn't talked about that during his campaign at all, but he just decided we weren't going to do it. And it never happened. And it was pretty quiet for those 4 years.
Yeah. And the thing about that issue, I was at Fish and Game for some of those years. Yeah. I was in the public information field in some of those years. And the thing that amazed me about it was how these decisions that in any other species that Fish and Game would dealt with would have been a very kind of micro kind of decision thing that some very special interest groups here in Alaska would care about. When it came to wolves, you know, letters from second graders arrived on the doorstep of Fish and Game from all over the country. You know, it was such a massively explosive issue nationally.
It was, especially there in the mid-'80s when Walter Hickel was governor, and he pushed hard to do wolf control, and he started, and then he backed down. And it became, people have always fought against it. And when we had, in 1978, when we were discussing all of the additions of new refuges and parks in Alaska through ANILCA, you know, and we added 104 million acres of parks, that was kept Alaska in the forefront. And so the people opposed to wolf management or wolf control really had a national attention, you know, could get national attention and do that. So it was that's why it was got to be so political. And then when Hickel got in, people didn't trust him much on wolf management.
And there was the aerial control idea that came in and all that. And I remember the director then was Kelly House, who people were calling Machine Gun Kelly House and all that.
Yeah,
became so politicized and all that.
He was one of the people that was really dedicated to wolf control and kind of a lightning rod for controversy. And he was there during the entire Hickel administration.
Yeah.
But, you know, now you look back on it, he probably wasn't nearly as radical as some of the people now.
It's fascinating. We could obviously talk on and on about this, and you will have the opportunity to talk more about this. It's happening tonight. It's from 7 to 8 p.m. It's at the UAS Glacier View Room. Tina, it's Wildlife Wednesdays, and thanks so much for bringing Wayne in. It's obviously we could go on for this for a couple of hours. It's great to talk to you about it. Fish Politics and Wolf Wars is the name of the book that Wayne's done. Is it going into a second printing where there'll be some additional features like an index and stuff like that, you were saying? So that's really cool that that's happening, and copies of that book will be available tonight. Anything else about Wildlife Wednesdays that you want to tell people about,
Tina? Just encourage everyone to come out tonight, and also next month on the 20th, you'll be able to see Carrie Howard's Wildlife and Nature Photography. Most of you will know the name Carrie Howard, But for those of you who don't, I bet you appreciate her photography almost on a weekly basis in the outdoor section of the Empire in Wild Shots. So that's going to be very, very nice.
Very cool. All right. Wildlife Wednesdays, it's happening once again tonight. It starts at 7 o'clock. It's at the Egan Room 221 in the UAS Glacier View Room. And Wayne Reglin is going to be talking about the history of wolf management in Alaska. Wayne and Tina, thanks so much for coming in.
All right. Thank you. See everybody tonight.
Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, and with me now, Matt and Julia Black here from Mountain Lift, and Matt from Eagle Crest. Hey, how's it going, you guys?
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Good. So let's just talk. First of all, I always like to just talk about it right off the bat. Snow's in the forecast.
Yes.
Which is good.
Yep. We've kindly come over the kind of a warm stretch and picked up, I don't know, maybe an inch or so last night on the higher parts of the mountain. But yeah, looking like a couple inches over the next couple days.
Yeah.
And that can
yeah.
always turn into more in Juno. So.
So what, in general, the conditions I keep hearing is it's pretty wet, right? Pretty, the snow's kind of heavy. It's not, you know, it's Juno. It's that kind of Juno conditions.
Yeah,
that
it's been it's either been kind of warm and wet Juno snow or been a little bit on the firm side where the groomer skiing has been really, really good. But off the groomers, the past couple days weren't all that great. So we're hoping that it turns around and we start getting some snow to soften everything up rather than just the groomers. But until then, you know, the grooming team's been out in force trying to lay down as much corduroy as they can. I think people have enjoyed it, certainly, and it's just a different experience than our usual plentiful snowfall and softer conditions
yeah.
that we can have.
Yeah, yeah, cool. And Julia Black from Mountain Lift, let's talk coffee.
Talk coffee.
Yeah, so tell me about Mountain Lift.
Well, Mountain Lift is I call it coming back full circle. When I was 18 years old, I went off to baking school, and I baked on NOAA ships for about, 10 years or so. And then I left it and have been doing childcare and school. I work for the school district as well.
Okay.
And I've come full circle. And so Mountain Lift offers a variety of scones. We're just now starting up with vegan and gluten-free.
Oh, cool.
And vegan gluten-free, getting all the
best.
How do you
do a gluten-free scone?
Well, I haven't figured that out quite
yet.
But we do have the brownies down.
Oh, okay.
We have the brownies down.
And maybe a little denser than the typical brownie,
Yeah, a little denser.
You probably don't miss the gluten in a gluten-free brownie.
Not that I have heard yet. People really like them. We also have a chocolate peanut butter cookie that is just to die for.
Okay.
It's very good. And then we do a bunch of cookies and different kinds of things, but it's the hot chocolate that most people come for.
Okay, yes.
I have marshmallows.
Do you have a certain brand of hot chocolate that you use, or how do you make the hot chocolate?
I have a secret.
Okay. She's giving me the cut sign right now.
Yeah. It's just very chocolatey, and after a really bad day of skiing, it's very fun to watch a face light up when you say,
So would you like marshmallows?
Uh-huh.
Would you like whipped cream?
Yes.
Would you like sprinkles? Would you like some more chocolate? And then, you know, the bad day dissolves into a wonderful day.
Yeah,
and
right.
And off we go. It's how most parents get their kids off the mountain.
And coffee?
Espresso.
Espresso.
Most coffee drinks that we have. And,
okay.
And we use Heritage, which is
great.
You know, a lovely brand.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we've been doing this for about 5 years, my son and I.
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
And what? Yeah, tell me about sort of the, is it typically people coming in? What are the hot times of day for you?
The very hottest time of day is from 2:30 to 3:45.
Okay, but not mornings.
Not mornings.
Oh, I would think maybe people would do that, but I guess people get up there and they're ready to hit the slopes without, they've already had their coffee at home or something.
Yeah, very
maybe.
Few people drive up the mountain without coffee
yes.
in their hand.
Yes, it's not advised.
No, and ever so often we get those desperate folks crawling to the stand going, I haven't had my coffee yet.
Right.
It's like, okay, we get it. We can help you
We can deal with this, yes.
Yep. The big thing that's on the horizon is Mountain Lift 2, T-O-O. And it is going to be up at the Eagle's Nest next year.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So what's the duty going to be like that up there? You got a couple of space heaters and...
yeah, operationally, it's...
yeah.
We're still figuring it out.
Right.
And one of the things we definitely want to get, and Julia wants to hear from everybody, is what you know what they'd like to see in a kind of a food stand at the top of the mountain, because it obviously can't be a full offering. Just getting things up there and off the mountain comes with its own set of headaches.
Right.
But we think it can be a great thing to just offer another outlet for some mm-hmm. food, and whether it's wraps or soup or chili.
Couldn't you just
or coffee.
Do runners from down and just have them with a tray on the chairlift delivering up?
We've thought about that.
Yeah.
It would get cold.
Little dominoes,
I think.
The sack they carry the pizzas in, something like that, right at the chairlift.
Well, that's cool, but that is a real unique challenge, operating literally on the top of a mountain.
Yes.
Operating a coffee stand and hot chocolate and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, what kind of challenges do you think are going to happen there as a result of that?
No running water.
Okay.
Limited electricity.
Right.
So we're not going to have the full espresso thing going. You know, machines are very expensive, and so you don't want it to freeze up accidentally. So we're looking at hopefully something that folks will stop in for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drinks, warm.
You can always melt some snow if you need water. You know?
Yeah, you know, we could do that. Hold it over a light somewhere and you know, put it on top of the Bunsen burner.
Yeah, you know, camping style.
Yeah, yeah, you know, that'll work.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And, but we're looking for any suggestion.
Okay, cool.
And the last couple weekends before we close, there'll be a big voting on the wall, and we'll put up everything that we can do. You know, what can't we do? I'm telling people, think big. Because you never know what's going to come out of the smallest suggestion to the largest suggestion.
Yeah, right.
You know?
That little spark of inspiration will come mm-hmm. from some suggestion. That's right. That'll be mm-hmm. great. Well, is there a place where people can put up suggestions right now?
Yes.
Up at Mountain Lift? Okay.
Yes. It's on the wall. It's on the wall just as you go up the first flight of stairs onto the locker level.
Okay.
And so it's kind of kitty corner to where we're looking out of our little shop. And our shop is also on the locker level. We
right.
are not on the food level or the large room level. And people have missed us for a couple of days. They'll come down and go, you know, we could smell you, but we couldn't find you.
The smell of hot chocolate was intoxicating.
And the blueberry scones.
Yeah, all
and
that
the
stuff.
Cinnamon rolls.
Do you cook that stuff on site, or how do you get the cinnamon rolls and scones and all that stuff there?
I rent the kitchen on Friday nights.
Oh, okay.
So after school, I run up and mix a bunch of things up in the next morning. Whatever I can hold off for the next day. I have a wonderful little convection oven that just gets plugged in back there. And we bake them off and wrap them up and put them out.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Yeah. So just kind of a small scale thing. And but you probably, how many, do you know, do you have an estimate of how many cups and how many scones and things like that you do a day? On a busy weekend day?
You know, not really. I know that we go through, I can tell you how many gallons of chocolate milk
okay,
we go through.
Okay, let's hear it.
We go through about 3 gallons of chocolate milk and about a gallon and a half of milk.
Okay.
So you know, we have a very, you know, our crowd is mostly chocolate milk. But we do offer smoothies. And we do have a new energy drink called a Blast. And the Blast is an all vitamin, very small caffeine, very no sugar drink that's very refreshing.
Cool.
And so that's kind of a big hit. People go, smoothies?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100% crushed fruit smoothies are a hit.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. All right. Yeah. Well, Matt, other stuff happening up at the mountain. You were talking about the little bit of a course happening on the smaller hill, on the Porcupine Hill.
Yes.
Is that happening?
Yeah, for a little train feature area. Right. And I think we are going to look at that when we get back up on the mountain tomorrow and just see what happened.
It was warm. Yeah.
So snow changes, but hopefully as it cools down and sets up, we can start getting something in. So possibly for this weekend, if not the weekend after.
And anything else people should know about this weekend?
We talked about it last week, but it's the big Learn to Ski weekend. So we're looking forward to inviting hopefully 45 brand new, never ever skiers up to the mountain. And we'll be releasing the names of the winners of that tomorrow.
Cool.
So we just got it from schools today when they got back in session, and we'll be announcing that tomorrow. So that's really the big thing for this weekend. We're looking forward to it, that, and just hopefully kind of the weather pattern changes and we start seeing some more snowfall.
Yeah. All right. Well, Matt Lillard and Julia Black from Mountain Lift, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know everything that's going on up there.
Thanks, Andy.
All right.
Thank you.